The international career of our star guest today began with the Swingle Singers, and since then he's toured throughout the US, including playing at Carnegie Hall and the Lincoln Center. He's been to Canada, Europe, Asia, and South Africa. He's worked with the Royal Philharmonic Orchestra alongside such names as Dame Judi Dench and Sir Patrick Stewart. He frequently appears on BBC Radio 3's Friday Night is Music Night with the BBC Concert Orchestra, and he's appeared in Cabaret at London's Pheasantry and Crazy Cox venue. On top of all that, he's sung duets with many leading ladies, he's appeared on stage, and he's been a vocal coach to Emma Watson. Well, I'm frankly quite amazed he's found any time to fit us in, but I'm very pleased to say he has. Michael Dorr joining us from Broadstairs. Michael, welcome to the programme.
Hello, good morning. Thank you for having me.
You have got one very busy life.
Yeah, it sort of comes in bursts, you know. Sometimes I'm running around like a mad thing. And then a week like this is actually pretty quiet, so I've got my feet up in Broadstairs. Although we're decorating, we've got a new house, so we're doing all that sort of thing. And then next week is busy, you know. So that's the life of a freelance singer, you know. No week is the same, and I love that. I love having different things going on at different times, you know. So I love the busyness, but I love thinking, oh, actually, I've got a few days of doing nothing now, you know.
That's the appeal, I guess. You do have these surprise moments.
Absolutely, yeah, and so, you know, a lot of the stuff I do is studio session work, so that can come in quite late. So you know, it keeps me on my toes. You know, I've always got to be ready to just hop on a train, or a tube, and get and do something, you know.
Before we look at the elements of your life, where, Michael, do you think this came from? Were you born into a performing family or a musical family?
Yes, absolutely. That's where it started. I grew up with musical parents. My mum was a hairdresser, my dad was a welder, but mum had always sung since being a little girl. She went in for music festivals. And so she'd always sung, and she continued to sing while, you know, she married my dad. And for a long time, dad just sort of put up with mum going out and doing her gigs. You know, it was a sort of amateur stroke semi-pro. You know, it was a hobby. She was a hobbyist, really. But dad could see mum going out, and he thought, oh, how can I do something, you know, to go with her? And rather than just sort of sit in the audience. And mum's singing teacher said, why don't you learn to play the guitar? And at 45, he learned to play the guitar. And then they went out together. When dad was 45, I was 5, and my sister was 11. So they would go out and entertain in the sort of Lincolnshire area, and they would take us with us with them. And so it was, you know, it was always there. My sister played the piano, my uncle sang, you know, it was always music in the house. It was just something that happened.
Do you think there was an advantage for you in watching your father learn an instrument? So you weren't born into a family where he could already do it, but you could then see the work that went into building up from that very first moment to being at a level to be able to perform. You saw that transition.
Yeah, I think so. You know, mum played the piano as well. So she, you know, she would practice the piano. Dad would practice the guitar. And yes, he taught himself. A very good friend of mine, her father played the musical saw, and dad saw him and heard him play the musical saw and thought, oh, I quite fancy that. So he picked that up as well, and taught himself how to play the saw. So you know, it was just something that I wanted to do myself. You know, you're right. You know, I saw my parents learning music, and so I learned it myself. And I had singing lessons, piano lessons, and then later on French horn lessons, and then went to music college. It just seemed the natural thing to do. You know, I was pretty hopeless at anything else. I couldn't really, you know, I'm not very practical, but music I could do. It was sort of in the genes, I think.
And your parents were very supportive of it as well, because that's a positive.
Oh, absolutely. I know, some of my friends said that the parents didn't want them to do music. They wanted them to go off and be a plumber or a doctor or, whatever. And because music can be a very precarious business. And so I always said I would do a teacher training course. I went to the Guildhall School of Music and Drama and did a 3-year course there. But I always said to them, I'll do a teacher training course after that. So at least I have a qualification as a teacher in case it doesn't work out, so I could then become, if I wanted to be, I could be a school teacher. So I did that training. And fortunately, I got the job in the Swingle Singers when I was coming to the end of that year's teacher training course. So I never became a school teacher. In fact, the people that I was on the course with kept saying, "Why are you not applying for jobs? We're coming to the end of the course. You should be applying for teaching jobs." And I said, "Oh, no, if I'm unemployed, I'm unemployed. I'm not going to do this." And I was very lucky because I think it was the June or the July, I got a call from the Swingle Singers saying, "We need a baritone, and are you interested?" And I auditioned, and I got that job, and I started in the September. So I was lucky, it was just r the right time.
I guess, though, there must be some transferable skills you learnt in that teacher training year that you were able to bring to the way that you learn and the way that you teach others.
Yeah, I suppose so. I mean, I think most of my as a vocal coach, I learned most of what I teach now and when I'm coaching people from a wonderful lady called Helena Chanel, Shenel, not Chanel as in the perfume. And I went to have some coaching with her. I'd been working for a long time in the business, and I was doing lots for the radio. And they kept saying, "Can you sing this?" And I was thinking, "Oh, that's a bit high." And I just thought, right, okay, I'll. It wasn't a case of retraining. It was just a case of getting somebody else's thought in on what I did to help me sing higher. And I found her because of knowing about her work she'd done with Shirley Bassey and Annie Lennox, George Michael. I mean, a whole load of people, and they'd gone to her mainly because they'd been having problems. People who sing naturally for a long time, sometimes they get into bad habits, and it was their voice therapist, their throat specialist, Norman Punt, who said, "You need to go to Helena Chanel." I didn't have any problems, but I just wanted to sing higher. And I learned so much about being able to sing without effort from Helena. And that is something that I pass on to people that I work with now.
It's not natural for some people to associate the voice with being an instrument, but it is, isn't it? It's the most natural instrument that exists.
Well, it's a muscle. I mean, it's an internal thing. Whereas, instrumentalists, they convey it through an instrument. We convey it from our internal our internal parts, shall we say, for want of a better word. So it's very emotional because it comes straight out of the body to the audience,
Going back to that moment when you left teacher training college and you were taken on by the Swingle Singers straight into an international career, that's astonishing.
Well, it was crazy, because the group was so established. We went to Germany and did a couple of concerts, but then pretty soon after that, we went to do a tour of America, and huge concert halls and standing ovations and things like that. I mean, I was just a boy from Grimsby, and it was incredibly exciting. To talk about being beamed in, I I'd never experienced anything like that, so it was incredible to be suddenly catapulted into an international vocal group and touring the world and amazing audiences, sell out shows around the world. It was incredible.
And then at the other end of the spectrum, you've got your cabaret performances where you are performing very intimately to a small room of people.
Yes, I do that. I perform at Crazy Cox every Christmas. I do a couple of shows there in December. In fact, I've got one coming up. I'm doing a mid-year one on the 12th of July. And Crazy Cox is, it's just a lovely venue. It's my favorite venue, if I dare say that, for cabaret, because everybody can see you. There are no obstacles. The sight lines are great. And you can sense them as well, because I don't like the audience to be completely in the dark. I like to be able to see them, because a lot of it is I'm talking to them as well as singing. And people will say things and shout things out. And in fact, the one that I'm doing on the 12th of July, we're calling it an audience with Michael Dore. And the idea is that I get the audience involved. So I'm going to get them to, like the TV show does, people in the audience ask questions, and then I will answer and then sing and all of that. So I love the intimacy of a small venue. I've played the Albert Hall and Sydney Opera House and all of that, but being in a room where you only have maximum of about 80 people, it is very intimate, and it's very personal, and I love that.
There's nowhere to hide. You just have to be you, don't you?
Yeah, in that venue, and I in venues, small cabaret venues, yes, you have to be yourself, because you're not being a character. You are being yourself, and I think I've always preferred that. I just love, I've sung songs from the shows. I've done shows. But it's my favorite medium, because I can be me. I can sing songs from shows. I can sing jazz and pop and, light classical, maybe a folk song here and there, all that sort of thing. It's a whole mixture of stuff, different styles, which I build a program, so it's not lurching from one style to another. They all work quite well together. I love that. It's me, but singing different things,
Out of all the types of entertainment that you've been involved with, is there one of those that you prefer more than the others, or do you just like to keep the variety turning?
I think I like to keep the variety. I've always said, and I believe that I actually love what I'm doing at the time. As long as it's right for me, I always say this to students, you should enjoy it. If it's in the wrong key, then you're not going to enjoy it, or if it's just something that you can't relate to. But usually I'm doing exactly what I like to do. I do Steve Reich, quite contemporary music, quite, it's very exacting contemporary sort of classical music. And then I'll be doing pop and jazz when I do my cabarets and music theatre and all of that. And I think it's whatever I'm doing at the time, I just throw myself into it. I do a piece called Sinfonia by Luciano Berio, which I've done throughout my career, because I did it in the Swingle Singers, and now I do it. I'm employed as part of a solo voice group. I work with Synergy Vocals as the baritone in that, and do that piece. And when I'm doing that, I absolutely love it. So it's hard to say. I suppose if I had to pick one, I would say it's the cabaret, because it is just me doing whatever I want to do. I choose the program, and I choose who plays with me and all of that. So I maybe that's Maybe that's my favorite thing, you know, and I can talk about my life and my career, and we have laughs with the audience, you know. So
Well,
maybe that's, yeah, maybe it's the cabaret that is my favorite.
given everything that you've done in your career, it's hardly a surprise that you're a much sought-after vocal coach. And these are big films that you've worked on: Rocket Man, Beauty and the Beast. On television, you worked on the TV documentary for Dame Vera Lynn's 100th birthday. Each of those on their own would give us a program's worth to talk about. How do you approach a role like that? Because these are big names you're working with.
I think you don't get drawn into the sort of fame thing. You know, I work with students who are preparing to go into the business, as well as somebody like Taron Egerton for Rocket Man. And you just go in and you're presented with something, and then you just deal with it. You know, I don't go in there thinking, oh my God, you know, this is Taron Egerton. You know, I go in thinking, right, I can help Taron be better, which is what I tried to do in Rocket Man, you know, and we worked together for about 6 months on that, getting him ready for the role. And you know, I just love that. And also, you know, you spend a lot of time with, I worked only for a short time with Emma Watson, but I worked for a very long time with Taron. And you know, you just get to know each other. And that's special. You know, it's lovely. You know, and when I work with my students who are, some of them are only around 20, you know, I get just as much joy out of doing that. I love that sort of helping people and passing on what I know to help them do it easier and hopefully better.
It's building that mutual respect and trust.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. I mean, obviously, when you first meet somebody, you know, they don't know you and you don't know them, and you do have to build up a rapport. It's the old thing, you know, just be nice. Just be on both sides, you know. I worked recently with a great actor called Michael Gould, who was recently in the production of Into the Woods at the Bridge Theatre, which was wonderful, a wonderful production of Into the Woods. It's still going on. Now, he's left it now. The original cast, some of the original cast have left now, but it's moving into town and all that. Anyway, he came to me because he acted for years and years and years, decades, but he hadn't sung for a long time. And he got in touch with me and he said, you know, I've got to go up for this audition for the show. I'm really scared. I don't think he'd mind me telling you. He said, I haven't sung for a long time. And he came in and he tried to be a singer, you know, and I said, stop, let just go with the acting, you know, just concentrate on the words. Think how you would do it if there wasn't any singing involved. You know, just focus on that. You know, obviously we worked on things, but he said, oh my God, that's just changed my whole thought about how I'm going to deal with this audition. And I saw him, he got the job. And then I saw him after one of the performances, and he said, you got me this job. And I said, no, I didn't. You got the job. He said, just having that thought of still being an actor, not having to go in and be a singer, you know. And I love that, you know, it's so sweet of him to say that. But he said, well, no, it's true, you know, it changed the way I thought of it. And he did brilliantly, you know. So it's lovely when that sort of thing happens. You know, that's the reason I love doing it. You know, I love being me on stage. I love going out on stage, you know, with an orchestra or doing my cabarets or whatever. But I love that helping other people.
Michael Dore, we are swiftly coming to the end of our time together, which I'm really sorry about because there is so much more we could talk about. But before we go, and noting your cabaret performance at the Crazy Cocks on the 12th of July, what else are you working on at the moment?
Well, I do a lot of film soundtrack. There's sort of the majority of my work, my regular work, is films. You know, I've sung on many film soundtracks. You know, last year I was doing what did I do last year? I did Project Hail Mary, Rivals 2 for the telly, Phoenician Scheme, Mission Impossible, The Final Reckoning, Avengers documentary, Avengers Doomsday, Frankenstein, blah blah blah. You know, I did a whole load of films last year, and this year I've done, you know, a few more, like Anxious People and Supergirl, and you know, video games, and you know, all of that. So I do a lot of that's the sort of mainstay of what I do. And you know, sometimes it's me on my own, sometimes it's, you know, 40 singers. And that teamwork is great. You know, I love that. I've done like three solo albums. The last one, Who Am I? I did last, that came out last year. So that was a, you know, that was something else. You know, it's varied. I do this thing, Evening of Shakespeare, with music and anecdotes, called The Food of Love, created by Nigel Hess. I've done that a number of times. That goes on. So we're doing it next year in Stamford, and festivals next year, and we did recently did it at Cadogan Hall. So it's varied. It's very varied.
Plenty to keep you busy. Michael, is there a website that people could visit if they wanted to find out more about you?
Yeah, absolutely. It's Michael Dore. That's Michael, MichaelDore, .com.
Very straightforward. MichaelDore.com. Well, it all started with the Swingle Singers, and you've come a very long way since then. Michael, it's been an absolute pleasure. You are appearing in an audience with Michael Dore at the Crazy Cocks, which is a cabaret venue very close to Piccadilly Circus. A number of our guests have appeared there and will be appearing there on the 12th of July. And if people want more information about that, then I think if you just Google Crazy Cocks, Michael Dore, that's Cox, COQS, the French way, then I'm sure you'll find more information about Michael's appearance on there. Michael Dore, I wish you all the very best with that upcoming performance and everything
Thank
else you've
you.
set your heart on for this year.
Thank you very much, Andrew. It's been lovely to talk to you.